Hey, and welcome to the Making Margin podcast. My name is Nick Foy. I'm the founder of Greenway Wealth Advisors. We are an investment management and financial planning firm based in the south end of Charlotte, North Carolina. And we're glad to be back. 2023. We've done 43 episodes. That makes this episode number 44 of our illustrious podcast. We're glad you are with us today for maybe some technical stuff that you may or may not enjoy. I think you will. I think it's good. I think we're going to do a good job with it. We're all remote today. Our three, all four advisors are here and with us remotely. Let's see, where should we start? From his home in Huntersville, North Carolina, is our Director of Financial Planning and Associate Advisor, Jeff Eminger.
Happy New Year.
Hello. From her home, which is also my home in Charlotte, North Carolina, Senior Advisor and our firm CFO, Natalie Foy.
Hello. I'm home with a sick kid today, so not in the office with Nick.
I feel like, does he have the TV on right now?
Yes.
I feel like I can hear in the background a little bit. Maybe want to tell him to, like, you know, turn down the volume. He's been watching these YouTube videos about
plane crashes.
In-flight disasters. And they're really long and detailed. And it's actually some pretty interesting information. There's one I was watching earlier about a Southwest flight that had an engine explode. And they go through everything that the pilot and the co-pilot did. It's like an hour long.
Isn't it fascinating what kids get into?
And then YouTube will just keep feeding it, you know? From his home in Charlotte, North Carolina, senior advisor with our firm, Drew Harris. Andrew R.
Okay.
Harris. Hello.
R, yes.
And we are fresh off of the Georgia Bulldogs winning the national championship. Drew and I both did our financial planning certificate through the University of Georgia. Have you ever been to Athens, Georgia? I bet you have.
No, but I've drunk terrapin beer.
Oh, well, I think that I probably have too. I didn't know I was from Athens.
It's really good too.
Yeah, so we're pretty well connected and we're really proud. I was working out today with a group of guys that I work out with, and one of the guys that I work out with played football at University of Georgia in the late 90s. And everyone was like, oh, congratulations, I bet you're all excited, blah, blah, blah. Nobody said anything to me, even though I did my certificate of financial planning via University of Georgia online. And I had
you're on the CFP. You're on the CFP quiz bowl team.
The CFP quiz bowl team. That's right. And I graduated with distinction. I don't know what that means. Today, we're talking about a bill that was signed into law on December 29th, 2022. The short name of it is Secure Act 2.0, Secure 2.0 Act of 2022, as part of the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2023, was signed into law on December 29th, 2022. All right, so President Biden signed into law Secure Act 2.0, Secure 2.0 Act of 2022, as part of the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2023. On December 29, 2022. And there are a lot of, this is a thick bill. And I'm sure there's stuff that has nothing to do with what we're going to discuss today. This is the only part that's sort of relevant to us as far as our line of work. And we thought we would take some time to summarize those changes, because if you have money in a retirement plan, want to put money in a retirement plan, someday want to retire, what else? You have children you want potentially to go to college and you want them to save for college in a 529 plan, this law affects you. I can't think of any better reason to listen to us than that. So this law affects you. We're going to talk through some of our favorite provisions. We're going to upload a summary with our show notes so you can see some more. We won't be able to cover everything, but we'll see what we can do. Okay, so broadly, a big purpose of this bill is to expand access to retirement plans to allow and encourage more people to save. We'll talk through some of that. To free up withdrawals and make withdrawals easier for a lot of different reasons. We'll talk through that. There's some changes to small employer plans, individual retirement accounts or IRAs, employee stock plans, all sorts of stuff. So we're going to tell you what some of our favorite specific provisions are. As always, nothing that we're offering here is tax advice or investment advice specific to you. A lot of things that we're talking about here, we're still not really sure how they'll play out in the real world and what strategies we would recommend people apply in order to sort of maximize their ability to take advantage of whatever exists here. there are a lot of things like, yeah, we just don't know yet, and we'll have to wait and see how it plays out. So with that, I'm going to go around in a clockwise fashion, or maybe it's counterclockwise actually on my screen, and ask sort of what your favorite things are. What do you really like? I think for the most part, it's good. Most of the stuff that's in here is good. There's just a lot. And everything that we've been trained on has changed now, or a lot of things we've been trained on has changed now. So, all right, let's start with Jeff. Tell me what your what's your very favorite thing in the Secure Act 2.0? What do you, at night, you're like, you sit back, you have a cocktail, and you're like, man, I'm really glad that this provision exists.
Oh, yeah. I've been spending all my evenings reading through the 1,000 pages of the bill. So, yeah, I mean, to your point, there's a lot of stuff in here. Not too much of it is super time sensitive. One thing that I'm most excited about is something that's not in the bill, which is there are a lot of conversations about eliminating backdoor Roth IRA contributions. That's not in the bill. So I think that that's wonderful from a planning perspective. It gives people still that ability, if they check all the boxes, to be able to get money into a Roth IRA. I'm a big fan of that. There are no like new limits on Roth conversions either, or non-age-based required minimum distributions. So there are some discussions about, you know, large balance IRAs, you'd have to take out a substantial amount of those and be taxed on it. I'm glad that that's not in the bill. Something that is in the bill that I am excited about is for the potential planning opportunities is 529s. There's going to be a route to, starting in 2024, to be able to distribute money from a 529 plan into a Roth IRA. There are lots of kind of restrictions and caveats on it, but what it does at a high level is gives incentive to save into 529s for college with the knowledge that after college, there's a chance you can get it into a Roth IRA for the beneficiary of the account. Previously, with a 529, if you had money left over, you'd either have to change the beneficiary on it. So now that money that's intended for one child is now going to another child, or you'd have to withdraw it, pay penalties and taxes. So the ability for it, you know, to go for the benefit of the child that it was saved for, I think is a big piece. More to come on kind of all the details of how that will actually occur, but I think that's a really important part and probably the thing I'm most excited about in the bill.
That's good. Yeah. As recently as September of, I guess it was 21 that the report came out, September of 21, when ProPublica came out with a report about Peter Thiel's Roth IRA that had $5 billion in it at the end of 2019. So he's one of the PayPal co-founders, and he had a Roth IRA with $2,000 in 1999, and it grew to be more than $5 billion by the end of 2019, all tax-free money. And the conversation was how is the federal government going to try and limit balances in Roth IRAs, right?
Yeah.
And the opposite of that happened really with this bill. Now, yeah. I was talking to a friend of mine the other day who's a tax attorney, and he was like, well, I mean, what their bet is, a couple things. First of all, you're betting the government saying, well, we'll take our tax revenue now instead of waiting until later. But number two, he was like, a Roth IRA, there's no way to get it out of your estate for estate tax purposes. That's a 40% hit. So obviously he's got whatever it is when he dies, billions of dollars nest egg. You either have to leave it to charity, your Roth IRA, or you got to withdraw it and figure out some other thing to do with it in order to get it out of your taxable estate. So that's what he was like, yeah, probably they're not actually that worried about it. So it's a good way to make headlines and say there's all this tax-free money, but the government will figure out a way. That's helpful. Natalie, what you got? What's your favorite thing? What things have you been like, I'm so excited about this?
Well, I think the ability to transfer the 529 funds to Roth is a great provision. And then a couple of other pieces. One for the uber wealthy, they've opened up some additional tax planning opportunities by increasing the age for required minimum distributions. And before I was in this piece of this side of the world, personal finance, even though I spent a lot of years in finance, the whole term RMD, required minimum distribution, meant almost nothing to me. So if that's you, don't feel bad. But essentially what that means is at a certain age, it used to be 70 and a half, right now it's 72, you are required to make minimum withdrawals from your IRA, which means you'll be paying taxes on what you withdraw on a traditional IRA. They are extending or pushing back the age when those need to start. So starting in this current year, you can take your RMDs, starting in 2023, this current year, you need to start taking your RMDs at 73 years of age. In 2033, that will get bumped up to 75 years old. So that gives people additional years to do some Roth conversions to try to minimize taxes on what is required to be taken out down the road. There are some other provisions in there around the penalties. If you don't take those RMDs, those are declining. They're still going to be significant, but definitely better situation for people who want to wait to take RMDs. The second thing that I'm excited about, and this is more for people who are new to saving and who probably aren't going to be as prepared financially, not going to be in that uber wealthy category, I really like the provision of requiring automatic enrollment of employees when they start a job for plans that are 401k plans. Employers will have to automatically enroll people at a minimum of 3% of their salary and a maximum of 10%. Employees can opt out, but I think I've worked with a lot of people through a volunteer organization that we support. And even just a little tweak in savings early on in life from, 3% to 4%, 5% can make a really big impact long-term. So I like that people are going to have to go in and opt out of that if they don't want to do it, because I think the more that we can automate savings, the better, typically for most people.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting one. And I completely agree. Plan design, when we think about like a retirement plan design, the industry has found is that, if people are set up to make a contribution, they rarely will go in and turn it off. But if they're not set, if they start at zero, they're not necessarily going to go turn it on either. And I think that that's great. I also looked at it and I thought, boy, who got in the ear of the congressman that inserted that provision in the bill? Like, what's special? And, there's obviously interests involved in it. And for sure, it's in the interest of savers to be saving, or of future retirees. It's everybody's interest that they're saving. But it's also in the industry interest, if we're being totally honest, right? Where the industry having more contributions into plans, that's good. So when I saw that, I was like, that's really great. And then I thought, it's not like Congressman Joe Schmo from Iowa came up with that on his own. He was like, oh, we'll put that in. Somebody was in his office.
And I would highlight that I don't think 3% is adequate for long-term savings. However, I think 3% is better than zero.
Yeah. Better than nothing, for sure. I think it takes pressure off the Social Security system also to sort of like in some ways require that for people that have the option. So that's great. Drew Harris, what are you so excited about?
I am so excited about a couple provisions that deal with retirement plans. One deals with money going in and another one with money coming out. And so with the money going in is that the employees have been able to, if the plan allows it, to make Roth contributions for their 401k. But the employer's contribution has always been pre-tax. And so now the employee has the option of having those employer contributions made Roth after tax. Now, one thing to know there is, the tax man needs to be paid, and it is not your employer. If you go that route, it is not your employer who's going to be paying the taxes on that. They're still going to get their tax benefit for making the contribution in the 401k. So you will be paying the tax, and so it'll be just the same as kind of making a Roth conversion. But if you believe that the tax rates are going to go up in the future, as we tend to, and you can be able to afford that tax liability, then that's something to consider, is making not only your contributions, but your employer's contributions, Roth contributions. So that's on the money end.
So,
go ahead.
Yeah. I was just going to, so just probably show up on your W-2 as additional. It'll get coded a different way. It'll say after-tax compensation that went into a Roth plan, and you'll have to pay taxes on it. You just add it up with the rest of your income.
That's right. Fast forwarding to kind of when taking money out, or in the situation of not wanting to take money out. So one of the benefits of a Roth IRA is that there are not the RMDs or the required minimum distributions. But that was not the case if you had a Roth 401k. There was going to be an RMD on those. This legislation now brings retirement plan Roth and the Roth IRA in line. And so there is not an RMD on your Roth 401k. And so it allows you, if you don't need the money, to keep it there to be able to grow tax-free longer. This is what I'm excited about.
Yeah. Does the delayed RMD, like nobody's required to take money until age 75. Every year you delay that RMD, the Roth in your working years, I think, becomes less and less beneficial. Does that make sense? Like in my working years, if I know, you know, part of the benefit of the Roth IRA or the Roth 401k, and what we tell people and why I do it myself, is because you never, A, the money grows tax-free, B, you never have to take it out. Well, every year that you delay that RMD, we're getting close to like life expectancy at this point, right? So if the RMD doesn't start until age 75 on pre-tax dollars, I can get my tax benefit during my working years. Potentially in lower income years, I have a longer time to convert if I choose to, right? If I choose not to, I don't have to withdraw until 75 at this point anyway. Like it's a longer deferral of that tax.
Yeah, yeah.
Like there's a calculus there where you say, well, how long do you expect to live? What's your life expectancy? What's your family history? All that sort of thing.
Well, then you talk about how it benefits the beneficiaries.
Yeah, I think that is a big part of the conversation.
So much of this bill and so much of personal financial planning is around how to minimize taxes. And that's not just for you personally, but for the legacy you leave behind. And so I think that that calculus is probably still the same.
Yeah, that part of it is. I'm thinking about for the person who, well, yeah, and I guess the person that is delaying withdrawals until RMD age because they don't need the money necessarily.
Yeah. And thinking about that, I mean, while if we go on averages and life expectancy, then I think that you're making a really good point of, you know, that 75 is pushing up against, you know, kind of what, you know, mortality tables. But I'm sure that, you know, y'all are all familiar with folks, I mean, that are easily living into their 90s and there's going to be cash needs there. And so while it may not be on the average and kind of a normal distribution, but those wings, those people are going to want to make certain that their funds are available and they can have more of it available with having it in Roth.
Yeah. Like if you're Ricky Bobby, who with his high level of income and advances in modern science, expecting to live 220, 300 years old, then you want Roth for sure.
Sorry, there you go. And there's a large percentage of the population that the RMD doesn't really matter because they're already withdrawing from their portfolios to fund their living expenses. So as soon as they stop working, money starts coming out of those accounts. But
yeah,
totally. That's why I think there are certain provisions like that automatic enrollment in the 401k that benefits your everyday, you know, person living paycheck to paycheck, hoping to make some savings, hit some savings every year for retirement. But these other provisions, like the RMD delay of age, opening up more ability to convert some of those funds to Roth for a number of years, like those are benefiting people in a very different wealth bracket than the people who, you know, are going to benefit from the 3% automatic enrollment of a 401k.
Yeah. Okay. I haven't gotten to say what my favorite provision is yet.
Hey, Nick, what's your favorite?
And first, which cocktail did you drink when thinking about this?
I had a gimlet, a gin gimlet.
Doesn't that have onions in it?
No.
It's a very simple recipe. In fact, simpler than I had previously thought. Retirement savings lost and found. Security 2.0 directs the Department of Labor to create an online searchable lost and found database for participants to find their plan. Their plan administrators of ERISA-covered pension and defined contribution, so 401k, and you're like, ah, oh, I had an old job and I don't know where that thing is. They got to put together a database now where you can search these things. I wish they would do that with HSA plans, because those are the ones that are really going to get lost. People have no idea. And it's just little amounts of money that most people have in their HSA. And they have no idea where they are and they forget about them, but they're so valuable. But now there's going to be lost and found. I'm really interested to see how in practice this plays out, that the government, the Department of Labor, can create a lost and found database for 401k and 403b plans.
It might be worth noting that on the morning that we're recording this podcast, the FAA site,
their systems all went down.
Systems went down. So planes across the United States have been grounded for hours.
Yeah.
But I have full faith that this site for 401ks and
it's gonna be great.
403Bs are going to be great.
I was thinking about all the heat that Southwest took over the holiday season for having all their issues with their software systems, and the government's all looking into it, and they're going to bring them in front of Congress and grill them and everything else. And then the FAA, like 2 weeks later, all of the airplanes.
No weather incidents. It's just the software system is down.
Yeah. It's pretty funny. It's unfortunate. Yeah. I pulled up my flight radar, and our airport, which is mostly domestic here in Charlotte, was not very busy this morning. So that's a shame. So I think lost and found is my favorite. And then my other favorite is the ability to do a SEP Roth contribution. I think for a lot of self-employed people, having the SEP Roth is going to be add a significant option. I will be interested to see a couple things. Number one, how long it takes for the industry to actually apply these optional provisions like the emergency savings account and your 401k and all that sort of thing. And the SEP Roth, like, the industry actually has to catch up. And so, like we see now, there will be some institutions that offer these types of accounts and some that for business reasons decide not to. And so they exist out there. But we saw with the individual 401k when it was 2007 that first like became a thing. And a lot of CPAs still don't even know how they operate or that they're a thing. And a lot of institutions, you know, it's not that big of a deal because it's like a small part of these businesses. But for a self-employed, you know, relatively high earning individual who has their own business, they're pretty significant opportunities that exist there. The industry's going to have to make sure that they're actually doing these things, and hopefully they're working on it now. So
I missed one thing.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. And,
just because at Greenway, we believe that generosity is one of our core values. So just thought it was worth mentioning. Again, this is going to be for people who are in the upper wealth bracket, but one provision that they are continuing with is qualified charitable distributions from an IRA. So that has been allowed starting at when you're age 70 and a half. That age is remaining the same. It allows you to take $100,000 per year and take it from your IRA and make a qualified charitable contribution to a charity, for example. That age is remaining the same, even though the RMDs are getting pushed back, and that amount is now going to be indexed to inflation. So again, it's a strategy to lower your tax bill and to give generously to different organizations. So another opportunity to be strategic in how and where you give.
Yeah, a lot of these things make it easier for people of means to minimize their taxes, if we're being honest, right? The maximizing the Roth thing and that QCD. I mean, I never thought that $100,000, I always thought that was really high, like a very generous amount, and that they're going to index it to inflation and let it grow over the years. I think it's pretty interesting. But there are also a lot of provisions that allow for people who are just getting started to, you know, make contributions, make withdrawals in emergency situations more easily, all that sort of thing. So I think overall it's a good bill. It's so complicated though. It's so complicated. Our tax code is so complicated. And on my wish list of things over which I have no control is to simplify the tax code.
And it took it the other way.
It totally took it the other way. Yeah. Which again benefits the industry, the tax industry in this case. So cool. Well, this has been, I hope, helpful. And like I said, we'll post a summary of these changes, questions, or if you want to discuss them more, how they might impact you, feel free to visit our site, greenwealth.com, and set up a meeting with one of our advisors. Be happy to talk through in more detail what we know and what we don't know, which is pretty significant, things that we don't know. And would love to the opportunity to talk with you more about these items or whatever else is on your mind. So grateful for your participation and listening. Thanks everybody for sending us your favorite provisions, for letting us know what those are. And as more details come out, we'll be sure to